are these guys?
That's my theme music. Every good hero should have some.
Just to echo what I said last hour, you can't get away with calling somebody an animal. And I know Raven Simone means well saying that she's toucan sandwich like that, but that's her. I wouldn't eat some cereal with her on the box on it. Toucan Sam or not, it's Raven Simone. Like I told you before, I have a bad feeling about these people coming on these shows because they're actors and actresses and they play a role. You know, so there, I said it. Welcome back in, Chris Bass and Bassline, UBM Talk, UrbanBroadcastMedia.com. When you download the Urban Broadcast Media app on your smartphone, it makes you a part of your life, my life, and everybody else's life. Well, thank you for that. Show email, I am ChrisBass@gmail.com. Facebook.com. Chris Bass, ChrisB, as in broadcasting, A-S-E. Can't miss me. Brown guy, glasses, with the microphone from Chicago. I had people over the years saying, I know you were Japanese. It was wrong, Chris Bass. I did not hail from Tokyo. Twitter.com, @ChrisBass, all one word. And the phone number is 312-754-4333. 312-754-4333. Welcome back, my people. When I reached out to my guest about this, and I had on the show before, I surround myself with good-looking people. I'm sorry, this is radio. We need radio and the internet to look at somebody good-looking. Now, me, myself, personally, I don't crack in many mirrors like I used to. I think I've gotten better with age, but that's just me. But my guest, every time I see her, the second time I've seen her or I've seen her online, more lovely and more lovely, not only in person, but in spirit and in mind. Please welcome back to Bassline, Arthur Cheryl Gist Williams.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Get that awesome. Mic right to him. Yeah,
awesome.
Good to see you
thank
again.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here again. Absolutely. The first time, I think we just hit it off really well.
We did.
And it was a lot of fun.
We did. We had a lot of conversations.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I said to myself, when the opportunity is right, I got her back, and so you are really officially friend of the show.
Okay,
yes.
I'll take that.
Cool.
I like that.
Absolutely. Before we get into, you had a recent event yesterday, but I want to get into your backstory again for people who don't know.
Okay.
Let's tell a little bit about yourself and how did you get into becoming an author?
So I'm Ceylon Williams. That's the way you'll find my books on Amazon. And I started, nice little simple story, did everything that, they tell you you're supposed to do.
Mm.
Grew up, went to school, graduated, got married, had kids. And then life changed. And so life changes, and it always throws you a curve. and you're like, I'm going through a divorce. Okay, now what? And I've got kids, and I'm going through a divorce. And so, you know, at the time we lived in the suburbia, and my folks, I grew up in Chicago. I'm a Chicago girl.
Okay.
So my first thought was, let's go back to Chicago. Let's go back where there is a village that I'm used to and, you know, loves all of us. And so I moved my kids back to the city, Chicago, and my daughter started high school. The boys were looking at her, and I was freaking out because, you know, that's not how it goes.
Right, yeah.
That is just not how it goes.
Right.
And so, you know, we went through a little song and dance. And, of course, I don't know about the audience out there, but if you've ever gone through a divorce, your kids – you know, they think it's either their fault, you know, you're the last ones they blame, but it's got to be somebody's fault, so might as well be mom's. And, you know, it was just, you know, I had to figure out a way for us to come back together as a family unit. And I found all kinds of things. You know, we had, our house was a house.
Right.
You know, the kids came by. I encouraged that so I could see them and meet them. And sometimes I had to say, okay, it's time you go home. You know, because we had bedtimes. When I don't know about you, Chris, but when I was growing up.
Oh, please, yes.
You know, like, good night.
Right.
And there were no cell phones, and there were no TVs.
There were no all-nighters.
No. All-nighters. Mm-hmm. You know, if you didn't get it done, then you in trouble.
Right. or you had to wait till the next day to complete it.
Exactly.
Right.
So, you know, so this is a whole new wave. I don't mind saying that she had a cell phone that had minutes, if you guys can remember back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it was a journey trying to figure out how this works and not take on the blame of my kids hate me. And so I started writing quite by accident. I didn't start out as a writer. That was never something I thought I'd do. But, you know, my mom kind of encouraged me. And she said, why don't you jot down some of this stuff? And, you know, it's almost as soon as you decide you're going to do something, the universe opens up.
Okay.
And so I was writing on whatever was available. Napkins, paper towel, whatever, you know, because I usually didn't have a pad of paper. So
okay. And they got your hands on, you was writing on it.
Whatever, you know, and I started putting together the first book, which was dealing, you know, I call it trying to stay sane while raising your teen. Because I had a teenager and that in-between age, that tween age, son, daughter, going through hormones. And I just, you know, there's a way, if you proceed like the adult that you are, to grow up these kids without hurting them and without them being all over the place.
Right.
So
you mentioned the word hate. You know, did they hate you because of the divorce, or you didn't want them to hate you?
Well, I actually remember the words, I hate you.
Mm.
Now, I understand. I mean, you know, some of that stuff you have to, you know, it kind of comes with the job of being a parent.
Right.
Especially when you hold the line and you say no, and you mean no, and you don't have to have any, you know, emotions attached to that. It's just no.
Right.
But I think nowadays it's really difficult because in the generation that we're in now, parents want to be friends. And it's really difficult.
I don't understand that. It's beyond my comprehension.
Now, I'm not saying that you can't be friendly.
Friendly. That's different, right?
Right.
That's a whole different process.
Right. Because, you know, I believe in, and we had it at the time, we had, like, at dinner time, you know, and this really, like, took my mother. She and my mother and dad, they were not these kind of people. But, you know, you can say whatever you need to say to me at dinner time or at any other time with respect. I mean, you're not going to be able to swear and all that kind of thing. But
gotcha.
I want to hear what's on your mind because you're growing up. I'm not with you all 24/7.
Right, exactly.
So I want to hear it because I don't want you to talk to the man down the street or, you know, somebody that is not going to advise you as I
correctly,
would.
Right. And don't have your best interest at heart.
Exactly.
And their own ulterior motives going.
Right. Even something like, I mean, think about it. You know, during that time period, if they don't already know about it, girls talk about everything.
Yes.
Boys, sex, everything. So do you want her to talk to her girlfriends and say that, you know, like a lot of them say now, can I say it on air?
Sure.
So oral sex is not sex. Excuse me.
Right.
I mean, so those are the kinds of things that young people may say.
Yeah.
And let's make it completely clear. So.
No, and you're absolutely right. And I had a conversation with some, you know, some younger guys who was telling me, we know, Bash, you know, if you have anal sex with a woman or a girl, it's not sex. Oh, yes, it is.
Right.
It's still sex.
It's
you know what I mean? You know, because, you know, I didn't deflower her. No, but it's still a form of sexuality. It's a form of sexy. When you talk about misnomers like that, that's why people get into trouble.
Exactly.
Because there's nobody to educate them, let them know that, no, that's still sex.
Right.
Yeah. You know.
And, you know, those are the kinds of things. So, or, you know, some of the other discussions that I may have had with my son, like, you know, hey, my sheets are wet. I didn't wet the bed. And I mean, it's, so you, it's time to have a conversation.
Absolutely.
Maybe even before then.
Right.
And so those are the kinds of things that, you know, when we talked on the show last night, you know, we were talking about, I call them pampered princes, because I don't know a woman alive who's raising a son who does not just love that boy to death.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with loving them, but you got to let them go so they can grow up and be men.
Yeah.
Responsible, accountable men. So we were talking about that because
right.
in the book, in The Pampered Prince, which is what this whole webinar was based on last night.
So now you mentioned it, so tell about the webinar in general. Just go on and reintroduce that, yeah.
So what? So I'm planning to launch at the end of the month a parent membership program.
Okay.
And what that will be is that offers parents access to all kinds of materials, ebooks, you know, my newsletters, all kinds of things, so that at any time of the day or night, based on your schedule and how, you know, your family is going,
right.
you have access to this wealth of information. Mm. So as a build up to that, I have about 6 webinars. So we had the second one last night, and that was The Pampered Prince, Reflections of Raising a Son.
Right.
So it's ideal for any woman raising a son, but I would say the key people would be single women or divorced women, because I find, and during my experience, I think that you really want your son, you want to give him the best you can, and we don't raise them the way men raise boys, just like men don't raise women the way women raise boys.
Very much so, right, correct. And that goes a long way, too, because, you know, I raised two girls, my wife and me did, and we also had other women in the house, like my mom and my sister, to also provide positive examples of that. I was joking around. I was doing a show downstairs at UBM Praise, and I was joking around that the only males in the house was me and the cat. And everybody else was female, right? You know, the only being I could bond with was a boy cat. You know, so other than that, you know, being in an environment with women, I was cool because that was the family, you know. And I don't look at it as a male chauvinist thing. You know, I would go back to the same thing all over again.
Right.
But I was conscious of my daughters because my wife and me were like, well, should we move out or, you know, do we stay home? And I was like, look at the finances. We could have moved out, but at the same time, I said to my wife, I said, Vic, I really want to stay home because not only with you, if we can have positive influence, of course, you know, from you and, of course, mom and my sister Tiffany, then I think they're getting the best of all type of worlds and everything else. And my wife agreed, and that's how all of us, you know, grew up together as far as from the standpoint of the children having positive female role models next to their mother.
You know what? And see, that goes back to what I believe is the village. So I don't know about you, but when in the audience, how many of you grew up where if you walked down the street and you were not doing what you were supposed to, not only did your mother know by the time and your dad, they got home from work, then, I mean, you got a spanking from the neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was everybody looked out.
It was a family.
It was a family.
Yeah.
And you didn't mind, you know, if Miss Cooper told you no, it was no.
Right.
It might as well have been your mother or
exactly,
your dad telling
right.
you no.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays, you know, I found this to be true when I was teaching high school boys, that I really had to walk a fine line when I was talking to mothers about their sons because, you know, depending on what mother and what age she was,
right.
she couldn't hear it because her son was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a problem.
It is.
That's a problem.
It is. I mean, it's like I refer back to when I really started to watch Judge Greg Mathis when he first got into the market that I heard he was here, so it took probably piqued my interest. And I remember the New York Times, not so much now, but they would send excerpts of their bestsellers to you online to see if you're interested in buying the books. So his book was online, and I got these excerpts, and I was reading it, and it dealt with the time that when he was a teenager, his mother was the one who enforced the tough love on him.
Okay.
So, for example, the police came knocking on the door and said, excuse me, ma'am, There's been a robbery in the 4-block radius. Do you know any information about this, or do you know anything? She said, hold on one second. She goes and grabs her son, Greg. Greg's like 12, 13 at the time. Here, take him. Either he did it or he knows who did it.
Oh, wow.
So you could get more tough love than that.
Right, right.
You know, and you see what Greg Matz has become, you know, just a well-known judge, and he also does some work for Operation Push here in Chicago. So he's been a great mentor and example mm-hmm. of what happens when you're guided in the right direction, but that tough love is needed.
Oh, absolutely.
And so here's a mother who pretty much said, look, I know my son is an arch criminal, but if you can help him, combined with me helping him, go on and take him because he knows who did it or did it himself. So, and once again, I was trying to tell parents about this before. That has to be not only intellectual honesty, but pain to know your child is doing wrong when you didn't teach that child that. You know, and some certain women or certain men in general, depending on their parental status, always get blinded. Oh, it couldn't happen to my child.
Oh, my God.
You know, that bothers me.
It does.
Because
it does.
Your child is obvious. Look, it's obvious that the fingerprints belong to your child and you're still in denial.
Yeah, I find that really interesting because one of the things that I do know, mm-hmm. the fact is, your child could do just about anything.
Yes.
And
yes.
So if you start with that, just like she took and said, it's either him or somebody that he knows.
Right.
You know, then that just wipes the slate clean. If it wasn't him, great. But, you know, the thing that bothers me the most right now in a lot of our communities is that I hate the killings. I really do. I am not an advocate about any of this. But if you are having your son at home at night, I'm saying this again.
Sure.
If you have your son at home at night and he has a bedtime and you know he's in the house, then you don't have to worry about him getting shot on the street at 1 or 2 in the morning. I do not understand why I see little kids into teenage years out past 10, 11 o'clock during the school night. What is that about?
I don't get it at all.
I don't understand that.
Because that's not how you were raised or I was raised and most of us. And we just it's foreign to us. It's foreign behavior because to me, I can't even grasp the idea of not having a curfew or not going to bed at 10 o'clock. I mean, it sounds along those lines. And like I said before, there was, like you said, it was a lights out. You went to bed at a certain time. Mm-hmm. That was it. And you didn't get up until the next morning.
Yeah.
But all the other time in between, you know, it's there is no parental clock. Mm-hmm. It's like they do what they want to do.
Well, and it's interesting you say that. It's funny. My daughter will be 30 this year, and mm-hmm. one of the things she said to me is she had friends when she was in high school who mm-hmm. would climb out the window and go out.
Right.
She said, first of all, we lived up too high. She couldn't do that.
That
was the first thing.
Right.
But she said, but I knew you were crazy. And I think there should be, you know, I'm not saying that we have to be violent with our kids.
No.
But they need to know there's a little bit of crazy in you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That you will show up anywhere and show out.
Right.
You know, and that you will also advocate for them no matter what.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's this, there's a lot. So that's what I talk about. That's what I coach about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I often, I have some coaching because I realize how difficult it is, you know, when you've got everything available, you know, you've got videos, you know, where the whole culture is beauty. And so if your daughter doesn't look a certain way, then not only are the kids at school talking about that
right.
to her, but somebody may bully her online. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. I understand that.
Yeah.
But I think there's some basics, and that's what I offer in any of my books. Basic, just tips, things you can do that are not hard.
Right.
All I say, for whatever parent, be consistent.
Yes.
You know, so if it's no, like, this is my perfect example. So maybe your son came home from school, report card isn't good.
Right.
Okay, so What are you planning to do about it? You can't just fuss at him and say, this is a terrible report card. Don't do it again. Oh, no. There should be some consequences. What are you willing to do? And then you got to follow through. So if he can't go out for a month, guess what, Mom? Guess what, Dad? You can't go out for a month either.
You have to have a follow through and a plan of action.
You do. You really do.
You know, and my dad, God love him, you know, he scared the hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally, you know, he was one of those guys that he really should have been a drill sergeant in the military. He did. He never went, but he always had that exterior
okay.
that if you do this, I'm going to kick you square in your ass type of mm-hmm. thing. And that's how, you know, his voice was deeper than mine. So you got to figure, you know, I'm just a runt, and he could just say something just out of command out of his voice. That's all I needed. I told this story before on my program. When I was 13, I was playing basketball at Eckersall Park on the southeast side of the city. In fact, it's right over before you get to 83rd and Yates, like 82nd. And I was playing basketball, and 3 to 4 cars pull up, and about, it looked like 5 to 6 people deep out of each car running onto the court, beating up everybody because they're beating them into a gang. This is when the Black Peace Stone Nation was a popular gang. And so they had come out and really was recruiting and beating everybody, and I was running for my life. This guy catches me from the back, and he's about to really let me have it. I said, dude, please don't beat me up. My dad will kill me. And he fought this. He thought this was funny. He said, oh, he got a father. When he said that, I took off running. He thought it was funny that I had a father. Because of him saying that, he let me go, and I was able to take off running back home. I didn't fear the gang. I feared my dad. That's who I feared. These gangs had nothing on my father. So that was me, and I always thank my dad for that. You know, he had passed away when I was 22. And I've always said that the death of my father was the birth of my manhood. And having gone through that, it's always been a process for me because, you know, like they say, they don't make them like that anymore. You know, he was just one of those dads that was hardcore, you know, tough exterior. But every now and again, he showed that soft side. Like, remember one time he come home from work and he goes to his pocket, takes out 5 20s. And gives to me $100 to take that. I said, I'm 15. I'm like, this is like $1,000.
I know, you were wealthy.
But I was like, please. I could go get my girlfriend and some buy some new jeans and everything else, or some gym shoes. But I said, Dad, why are you giving this to me? Because you don't steal from me. Aww. And I thought that was, I didn't have to steal from, you know, from my family because they gave me everything, me and my sister. And what it stemmed from is a conversation he had in the barbershop with other parents and other guys, and they were telling about how their children stole their jewelry and, you know, their cars and stuff like that. And he sat there and thought about, my son doesn't steal from me. So he showed his appreciation that time. I've always thanked him for that. It was always just one of those moments where you know you're doing something right, you know. And like I said before, those type of fathers, you don't see them anymore. Mm-hmm. Or someone even is just non-existent.
No, I beg to differ.
Okay.
I beg to differ.
Okay.
But you don't see it a lot.
Okay, a lot.
You don't see it a lot.
Okay.
Because I do know, you know, I know some great men now.
Right.
I mean, I'm married to one of them. You know, my kid's dad was, you know, a great dad as well. Uh-huh. So, I mean, you know, but I think that the trend now is, you know, where there's single parent households.
Right.
It's not, we're in a culture that's real interesting about marriage, you know, and I don't know. That's a subject that we could talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure forever. But,
sure.
You know, so when all of that is taking place, I think it's important for mothers to have a role model for their sons. And so a male role model.
Gotcha.
Because I'm sorry, a woman, I can't show you how to pee. I can't show you how to tie a tie. I still don't know how to tie a tie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, some of the things that,
right.
Men are proud to do.
Right.
Polish shoes, you probably should polish my shoes. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
There's some things that men, you know, I used to watch my dad put his tie on, you know, and polish his shoes and shave. I mean, I hope I'm not shaving my face.
Right.
So, you know, there's some rites of passage kinds of things that men do that boys watch. And if they're using women as their role models, then that really kind of fools with the sexuality.
Yes, I know you're right. And let me rephrase what I said earlier about they don't make them like that anymore. Let's put it like this. That percentage has been lowered over time. Okay, that I agree with.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you're right. Like, my dad shaved, went to the cleaners. I always said this on the show. Went to the cleaners, you know, put his suits and shirts in the cleaners, get that heavy starch on his shirts, go to the shoe shine place, get his shoes shined, went to the barbershop, got a haircut, manicure. So those type of things was a holdover for me when I became an adult. I can't picture my life not doing that because of me being around my dad all that time, a long time. So you're right. There is that rite of passage, those nuances that men have.
Right.
You know, so if it's still passed on in some way, shape, or form, I think that young boy is better from it. They probably don't know at the time,
right.
But it's an investment.
Well, and I mean, you said something about, you know, just the bass in your voice. You know, so I watch this over and over again. So yeah. I would be at school teaching high school, and I could say something to one of my students.
Right.
Now, I was mean, so,
okay.
You know, if you don't do it, then there are consequences. But
right.
it would not be uncommon for them to hear a male coach or a male teacher say something, and it's just the tone of the voice.
Yes.
There's no, you know, there's no give in it.
Right.
You do what I tell you to do. And that's what I think helps men, you know, boys grow into men.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, women, if you're out there and your son doesn't have a role model currently, that's okay. You got all kinds of programs. You got the Southside YMCA. You've got, you know, Boys Club. I mean, you've got your church. If you're a part of a church family, find somebody, you know, if there's nobody in your family,
mm-hmm.
that boy can watch.
Absolutely. Because, like I said before, it's an investment. It goes a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing you need is that type of positive environment for your sons. And it always, it'll benefit. Once again, I know it's blinding them. They're not supposed to see it now sometimes. But once they get older and they're able to do those things, there's, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My guess is not, you changed your name. Is it Cheryl Gist Williams or still C. Lynn? Or so what, which one is it?
Okay, so as an author, I'm yes. C. Lynn Williams.
Okay.
My private life, I'm Cheryl Gist Williams.
Okay, you heard what she said. Okay. She is my guest. Welcome back to the show. Good to see you again. We're going to come take a break, come back. Chris Bass and Baseline, UBM Talk, UrbanBroadcastMedia.com. Stay close.
Jerome Butler, a retired lawyer and former Assistant Secretary of the Illinois Department of Human Services.
I'm Brenda Perry, a community activist and Colin Powell Republican.
I'm Rudolph Monroe, an actor and ventriloquist.
Together, we are the thinkers.
Live on Sunday, we bring to you unscripted conversations noon to 1 p.m. Central Time.
So open your mind to what's really going on, from news and sports
to politics and entertainment. We give you unscripted opinion on what is relevant today.
So join us for Unscripted Conversations.
It's Three's Company.
Rob Lee, LB Sweets.
Yo.
Tina Gray.
Yo.
And Lena Shanice.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
So, okay, I'm gonna play devil's advocate, please, into everyone's ears.
LB Sweets, what we got in the Ratchet Report this week?
It's not okay.
That's not okay.
Officially.
No.
The Kufino of the week.
Because you're a creep. Hell no. You freakazoid.
Yeah, what?
It is Three's Company on UBM Talk and now UBM Jam.
Friday from 6 to 8 p.m.
Only on UrbanBroadcastMedia.com.
The Damon Williams Show.
We went to the set of Arsenio. We were in the audience. And anytime you see white woman with a clipboard, chances are that person's going to be on TV. They're going to put a little dab of whipped cream here and here and here. That heifer squeezed that whole damn can of whipped cream all over my face. And then after she licked it off, my little dirty old man neighbor, who never has two words to say, I look out, he's standing at his Sunday best. So you like whipped cream, huh?
The Damon Williams Show, Wednesdays, 2 to 4 p.m. on UBM Talk.
Hello, this is Leon Finney, your host of Another Perspective on UrbanBroadcastMedia.com. We are the voice of Black America. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m. as we discuss the issues that impact Black America. Tune in to UBM Talk on UrbanBroadcastMedia.com, the simulcast on our affiliate station WBON 1690 AM. That's Another Perspective every Saturday from 4 to 5 p.m. And you can run and tell that.
UBM Talk, giving you volume to your voice. Call now
312-754-4333 to join the conversation.
And welcome back in the Baseline. Chris Bass back at you. This is UBM Talk on UrbanBroadcastMedia.com. When you download the Urban Broadcast Media app on your smartphone, make us a part of your life. Show email, I am Chris Bass at gmail.com. Facebook.com/Chris Bass, C-H-R-I-S, B as in broadcasting, A-S-E. Twitter.com. At Chris Bass, all one word. And the phone number, 312-754-4333. 312-754-4333. In the studio with me again, I'm going to say C-Lynn, because I want you, everybody, to know her name, because you also go to www.clynnwilliams.com for her website. Everything matches up. So, C-Lynn Williams, welcome back to Baseline again.
Thank you, Chris.
It was about parenting skills and some parents, like I said before about certain parents, no offense, but it just irks me when you mentioned before about certain parents want to be friends with their children and things along those lines. I don't necessarily get it. Like I said before, early in the conversation, I understand about being friendly with your children. And when you get older, form a certain bond of friendship along with, you know, the titles of being parent and now older child or older adults and things like that, or adult, whatever. But this friend thing, I don't know, where is it? Where do you think that stems from?
Well, oh my goodness. So let's go back. So this generation, let's talk about the generation. So
sure.
We're baby boomers, right? So the generation, millennials, it's a whole different mindset, right? So you're concerned with what's in it for you.
Okay.
And, you know, and that kind of thing. So,
right.
So my thought has to be that, you know, you want things around you to be okay. You know, that's about it. I don't really care about it as long as it's okay.
Right.
And that includes your finances. That includes your kids. You know, that includes a lot of things. Well, I beg to differ. The kids can't be inside of that. You know, you got to really know where they are. I mean,
right.
Like, let's give an example. So
sure.
This is one of my pet peeves, that I'm watching somebody walk down the street, a woman's walking down the street, guys do it too.
Right.
And they are, you know, so I have my cell phone in the audience, I got my cell phone in my hand. I'm looking at my cell phone and I'm checking out what's going on my cell phone. I got a little kid that's not much more than 3 years old walking either alongside of me, but I'm not paying attention.
Right.
So they're behind me now. Now, if anybody touches that kid, if the kid gets hit by a car, you don't know because you're not paying attention. So that's one thing. And,
jeez,
you know, that whole thing that goes with the friends is that, you know, some of them are so close in age. You know what I mean?
I was going to say that. Yeah.
So maybe you were 15 having a kid. So now you're 30 and your child is 15. You're not that far apart.
Right.
You know, so some of that is that they're growing up with you, and there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong, audience. But what I am saying is there has to be a line of demarcation. And what I mean by that is that your kids have to know that at the end of the day, you got their back. And sometimes if you are skinning and grinning, as my grandmother used to say, and you having fun, you missing some of the nuances that are going on. So maybe you didn't catch that when your son came home from school and went right into his room and closed his door, that he had a black eye. Or maybe you didn't check out the fact that, you know, some other things are going on with your daughter. And so, you know, being friends, they don't necessarily know that they can count on you. And they need to know that they can count on you. There's too much going on out here. So I think the being friends part is maybe some basic insecurities, you know, going on. I can't really explain it.
I think you probably just nailed a few, because that's why I think, too, especially at times, the age, I think there's a lot to do with just taking the armchair psychology guess, for example. Like you said, you're not that far in age. And you don't want to question your own mortality about you getting old anyway. So what more to hang on to your youth is to be friends with your child. I'm just taking the,
right,
you know,
oh,
stab in the dark. You know, I think that's something to do with it too. But, you know, I mean, because I don't get it. I mean, it wasn't meant for me to get. Because my parents are my parents. I don't want to be friends with them. They don't want to be friends with me. You know, we have titles.
Mm-hmm.
You're the parent, I'm the child, and I'm growing up. And so when I became older, of course, yeah, there's a respect factor there. Of course, it's different now because you're an adult. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I remember the time my dad and I had a beer at a bar down the street from where we lived at, and it was the first time I really had a heart-to-heart man-to-man. Mm-hmm. So he told me to meet him at the bar. So I go there, and he tells me that he's diagnosed with diabetes.
Okay.
And he didn't want to tell my mother yet. And so I said, you know, you haven't told mom yet? And he's like, no. He said, you don't understand, because my mom was the principal at the time. They're trying to get your mother fired and going to all these things with the teachers, trying to turn their back on her. She don't need me to add on more problems. I said, well, knowing mom, she probably knows already. Just having waiting for you to say something. You know, mom's pretty smart. She's a principal, for God's sake. She's a smart cookie, you know. So we had a conversation like that over a beer, and because he held it from her for 6 months during this time, because he would take the vials and needles and hide them, go throw them away somewhere else, things like that, in the bathroom. They were told her. I said, well, you know, just from a man to man perspective, that's your wife. Mm-hmm. So you might as well go in and tell her, you know, because she'll be more pissed at you if you didn't tell her with all this long time. And then knowing mom, like I said before, she probably knows, just waiting for you to say something. So that was the first and really only time we had a man-to-man conversation, which I thanked him for that, because we stripped the titles of father and son, just had a man-to-man thing.
How old were you then?
I was 21 then.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. By that time. Mm-hmm. So it was an honor, mm-hmm. because it, like, so a rite of passage, that's what it felt like in that situation. Right. So yeah, it was, but I think, you know, when everybody, of course, I'm not saying anything, you know, that nobody knows already, everybody's own styles of being a parent.
Sure.
But I think that also is a line of commonality we all share, it, you know, and share in common with that. So when those become gray areas, that starts to really concern me.
Well, here's what, this is what I know, and this is what I talk about in each of my books.
Sure.
When, you know, we're always really concerned with our kids when they're young, you know, and you think you have to really watch them as preschoolers and that kind of thing. And you do, because they get into everything. But if you think that when they grow up and become teenagers that you can, you know, let back a little bit, you can ease back, that is not the time to ease
back. No, not at all.
Because there's so many influences again. You know, I can remember I went to school. I lived way out south in Chicago, and I went to school down in Hyde Park. I went to Kenwood.
Okay. And I did,
so,
too.
Did you?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it was a long – this was before they had a lot of the transit, so it was a long bus ride.
Right.
So if I – didn't come straight home from school. You know, my mother was looking for me to make a phone call to her when I got home from school. And so if I did not do that, you know, then there was consequences, but, and worry.
Yes.
And, you know, nowadays, you know, if you don't hear from your kid and you don't follow up and they don't know that you're going to follow up with them and they get into trouble.
Right.
Who do they call? You know, I mean, you know, this was something we had an agreement. My daughter and I, when she started dating, I said, okay, so this is how it goes. If got your mad money, you know, you remember mad money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she had her mad money. I said, if you go get out with somebody and they cannot bring you back home for whatever reason.
Right.
And I listed those out. Okay. So maybe they've been drinking, hopefully not, but maybe they've been drinking or just decided they're not going to bring you back home. You can call me. And the rule was, I will not ask a lot of questions, because I was known for asking questions. I wanted to know everything. Okay. Crazy. Just crazy. So she said, Mom, you don't even stay up late enough for me to call you. I said, don't worry about that.
Right.
I will take care of that. I mean, because we get instincts. I think as parents, we know when something is not right, and that's what we're supposed to act on. And
right.
You've got that blurred line of friendship, then you're not really sure, should I act, should I not act, are they going to be mad if I, you know, you can't worry about that.
The one thing that I disagreed when the cell phone craze came out, and everybody has a cell phone, on the plus side, for example, like you said, having the mad money or calling from a pay phone back then, at least with a cell phone, you had your personal phone and you had to call, God forbid there was an emergency. So what I missed was when we had our landline phone and guys would call in to speak to my oldest daughter, I'd get on the phone and who's this? Let them know that, you know, don't even think about type of thing. And so it was like, I could hear the trouble in their voice. I used to love that. I would put on an extra thick, you know, when they call up. may I speak to who is this?
Right.
You know, just really forceful. Because I want to let them know, look, don't. Everybody has free will, as we all know. But even if you think about something to do with my daughter, I want my voice to be in the back of your head. Since you had called up and everything. Since you had the stones or the idiocy to call her in the first place, you know, now I got to give it to you. So now I got to lay down, you know, the James Earl Jones, Darth Vader type of thing. So like, who is this? Yeah, I'm going to speak to Brianna. What do you want? Well, I want to talk to... All right, then. Hold on a second. If you do anything to my daughter, I'm coming after you. And I would tell her that. So when the cell phone started, I couldn't do it.
Right.
You know, but I missed those days because I really was able to let them know in my court. I was like, Daddy, what are you there for? Because this is what daddies do. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't see it, of course, and they're supposed to, but he would think twice about doing anything. I guarantee.
Guarantee,
right?
Hey, you know, I like what you said about that because I'm going to have one of my webinars will be daddy-daughter.
Oh, cool.
And it's called The Princess in My Life. I believe the date of that one is March 31st.
Okay.
6:30. And feel free to jump on. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
But, you know, it's really, I think that what you're talking about with dads, you know, I remember my dad. You know, you better not get in anybody's car. And my dad didn't say a whole lot.
Right.
But what he said carried a heavy weight.
Of course it did.
You know, and I think that, you know, again, I want to go back to my parents who are single parents. You know, if you don't have the benefit of another parent in the household with you, you can still uphold those same values.
Yes.
You know, so for example, if somebody's coming to pick your daughter up, he's got to come in the house. There's no beeping the horn
right.
or she just leaves out the house. Are you serious?
Right.
I want to see who this is.
Exactly.
So.
And they could call it old-fashioned or whatever, but those work for me and work for most of us in that, you know, age range or was taught beyond that and let them know that this is what happens when you're a parent. And I think really before all this technology, those ways were the best ways. You know, well, sometimes because of technology being what it is, it still could be, it could be good or bad because that's how life is. That's how people are.
Right.
But when it's used to its advantage, sometimes the ways before technology are the best ways, I think, at times. It's combined with what's going on today.
Okay, so let me flip the switch a little bit.
Sure.
So I love technology. Mm-hmm. So let's go. So the technology is here.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
I enjoy it. You know, I say that let's not let it be a wedge
right.
in between us and our kids. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when you're at dinner, like have a house rule. There are no phones.
Thank you.
During the dinner.
Absolutely not. Right.
Period. Mm-hmm. If somebody calls, they got to call back unless it's 911. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
There's some things you can do and still enjoy the technology. So, you know, I say this, okay, so for the mothers where, you know, that son has passed, you know, like, they're adorable until they're about 9 or 10, and then they start changing into the young men that they're going to turn into.
Correct.
And so you don't recognize them because one day they still want to be next to you. They want you to hug them and kiss them.
Right.
And then the next minute, you can't hold my hand or nothing because the boys will see it. And
right. Like, it's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
So as the mom, you're like, wait a minute, what has happened? But I will tell you that, you know, use the technology. Like I can remember at one point when conversation with my own son was tough.
Right.
And I have two sons. I have a son. My own and then my husband's son. So he's, you know, I have two sons.
Sure.
He's the oldest one. But the youngest one, he would text me and he'd be in the house. And at first I was like, what the heck is this?
Right.
Are you texting me?
All you got to do is get up and just, you know, talk in person.
But you know what? But at one point it was hard for us to talk. It was hard for him to talk to me.
Okay.
And so I said, you know what? I'm going to deal with him right where he's at. And that's, you know, so until you get it on more even, meet them where they're at.
Right.
You know, if you don't like the music that you're hearing, go listen to it with them. And let's have a conversation. Make things teachable moments so that, you know, you understand. So, you know, some of the newer, like, oh, this is more recent. So have you heard of the show Orange is the New Black?
Yes, I heard it on Netflix, right.
Okay, so I watched a couple of episodes, and I was like, what in the world? And my daughter loves it. And so she said, so, you know, usually if I don't like something, everybody knows I don't like it. And
right.
I don't like that show. And she said, Mom, she said, do you understand? So we're having a philosophical conversation about a reality show TV, okay? But, you know, I like that kind of dialogue because I don't know everything, you know? I have one perspective. I have a baby boomer perspective.
Okay.
I have an older perspective. She has a younger perspective. That's not to say mine is wrong and hers is right and vice versa.
Right.
But I say use, you know, get to know what's out here so that you can have a decent conversation so you understand what's
right.
going on. You know, otherwise you just old. Yeah. Oh, we can't talk to dad because he don't know nothing.
Right.
You know, and that's not the way it is.
And that's not how you should play it. I think like anything else, you should thrive from somebody's experience. And then that way just makes you a better person and makes you have more decisions to make. And like anything else, you know, when you're raising a child, you know this firsthand, when they become models of society and go out and become citizens, all we want in those formative years is for when they make a decision for our voices to be inside their heads mm-hmm. of what we taught them, and then it's up to them to make said decision. So that's all we could ask for.
That's it. I mean, yeah. You know, and are they going to always make good decisions? No. And we didn't.
Right, exactly.
You know, I can when I think about some of the things that I did, oh my goodness, I just didn't share them.
Right.
My mom didn't know because I didn't say it. And I would be, like I was a young adult then. I think that, you know, we have to let, you know, part of our job is to raise them and give them those critical thinking skills. You know, so that means that you can't tell your kids to sit down and shut up all the time or hardly at all. I mean, mm-hmm. like if, you know, you might say, okay, we need some time away so right. we can get ourselves back together. But if you're constantly shutting them down, when do they learn to have a voice so that they can speak out when they're grown?
Right.
They don't. Where do they learn that? They got to learn that at home.
That's true. You know, and my dad, I mean, you know, God love him. My mom and dad were the classic good cop, bad cop. My mom was a good cop, and he was the bad cop. In fact, he was just worst cop. I mean, he was just through the moon. And I remember one time, and I said this story before, so those of you who heard it, please forgive me, but I plead heat stroke on the following story. I was about 15, 16, and I was dating my girlfriend, became my wife. We met in high school. Met at Kenwood, as a matter of fact. Okay. And so for those of you who know, the summer heats in Chicago is like through the roof, like combined with the humidity. It could be like, say, 85 with the humidity. It's like 1,000 degrees.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what it's very uncomfortable. So I'm cutting the grass, and my dad's back there with me. And next door to us was a Walgreens. So I had this brilliant idea. So I go over to my dad. I'm like, Dad, can I ask you a question? He's like, yeah. Could you do me a favor and go next door to Walgreens and buy me some condoms? So I can have sex with my girlfriend.
Did you actually say
yes,
that to
I
him?
Actually said that. I plead heat stroke. So he says, what'd you say? I mean, now he's like, you know, incensed. I said, now me being stupid, mind you, I said, could you please go to Walgreens and buy me some condoms so I have sex protection with my girlfriend? Condoms? Trojan, sir. Yes. Rib for her pleasure. Yes. So he gives me this look and then grabs my shoulders. I can remember it was yesterday. He says, son, I'm not having sex at this point right now. Why would I help you have sex? If I'm not going to have sex, it's going to be me, not you. Right. So this conversation never happened. Go back over there and trim the hedges. And I realize now what I said. I'm like, I'm surprised he didn't kill me. He had every right to, you know. And then at the time, my girlfriend, it became my wife, Vicky, he never called her by name. He said, that girl. Mm-hmm. She was Marlo Thomas for a long time. She was that girl, you know. So he's like, you want to have sex with that girl? Wait. We're not going to have it right now. So go over there back with the hedges, trim them. It never happened. And I slowly walk over, and I realize that man could have killed me. He took pity on me having heat stroke, you know, cutting the grass in 95-degree weather in the summertime.
You know what? See, and that I like that though, because you said it, and he didn't knock you to the middle of the earth,
right?
And you know, that teenage years, you don't. Your brain is like it's still developing, and
absolutely,
that's for a fact.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, that's for a fact. The teenage brain is still developing,
right?
And so, some of the things. I mean, like when I hear some of the things that I did, let me just leave it with me. Oh, my gosh. I'm lucky to be alive today.
Okay.
I literally am.
Right.
You know, and so, and you are too.
Yeah, me too, like. Right. Now, give me an example of what you mean by being alive today. What's something that come to mind?
Okay, so, you know, I told you I took transportation. It
right.
used to take me about an hour and a half
sure.
to get to school
okay.
every morning. I was always late. Okay, that's not what killed me. But what could have killed me was that I was the kind, if I saw the bus, I'm going to catch the bus.
Right.
Now, it may be, I may have to run across the street, and you know how crazy, just like you ask your dad that crazy question.
Yes.
So I'm going to run in between the cars. You know, and I mean, it didn't matter if the light was green or the light was red. The bus was over there, and I knew how long it took me to get to school.
Right.
And my goal was to get to school.
Right.
I didn't say I was trying to get to school safely.
But I was trying to get to
school.
You
know what I mean? And right. So I wouldn't take some, you know, when I think about them now, what if I fail? You know, I mean, so I won't tell you. I'll tell you this.
Okay, good.
Okay, all right. So don't judge me. I'm just going to say don't judge me.
No, of course, we don't judge here.
So I was in North Chicago. This was a little later. I was not quite a teenager.
Okay.
And I was trying to get to work. I had spent the weekend with a good friend of mine, and the train was there. And I was like, oh, my God. And I don't know about you guys, if you know, North Chicago is not the north side of Chicago. North Chicago is about maybe 70 miles north of Chicago. It's close to Waukegan and Zion. And so it's far. It's far away.
Right.
And so I was trying to get back because I had to be at work at 8:30. And I don't remember what time this train was. But what I did, I saw the train. I had just gotten out of their car. And I said, I'm going to catch the train.
Okay.
So in my teenage mentality, even though I was my early 20s, I go underneath the train. Now, if you remember, the Chicago Northwestern trains have a high, I don't even know what you call it, but they sit up. Uh-huh. The cars sit up. So you literally could go underneath, but if anybody sees you or if a train is coming from the other side, it's going to hit you and kill you.
Good night.
Okay. So fortunately for me, I'm here to tell you all about that. But
yeah.
Unfortunately, the train conductor saw me, and oh, my God, did he give me a tongue lashing.
Good night.
You know, so that's just an example of an undeveloped brain. Undeveloped, I admit it, you know. So,
let me ask you this. What was your life before you became an author and then your life when you became an author?
So I had, I was always a corporate woman.
Okay.
You know, I worked in corporate America.
Right.
I love technology. And, you know, I was raising kids and married. You know, that was the life I was in. And yet,
right.
Once I started writing, you know, I was a private person. I'm to some degree, I'm still private. But uh-huh. I've opened up a lot more.
Okay.
Because if you start writing and you really write from your heart, you know, the only way that you're authentic is to start peeling those layers of whatever, you know, trauma, you know, emotion, bad, good, whatever.
Right.
And so each book that I've written, and now, you know, I'm on book four, each book has taken a different turn, but it's also had me open up as a person. And, you know, it just really, it's an amazing metamorphosis, if you will.
Right.
It really is.
It seems as though also at the same time, it sounds therapeutic.
It is.
To let all that out, and you're, you know, even in, when you go back, when you're doing books, you have to go back into the Wayback Machine inside your mind, and probably some things you have to relive or not relive, but for the sake of the book, and for the fact that when you do it, that book is going to be a message to somebody. Somebody will tap into it and realize that, hey, I thank you for that. You know, and connect with it. So the connectability you have with your readers, what's that like?
It's, you know, it's funny. I couldn't make this stuff up. You know,
sure.
you live in this world of reality, unreality is what I say. And so, you know, I wrote the Trying to Stay Sane book. And I really connected with that because I actually was going through those experiences with my kids.
Right.
And then I wrote the Pampered Prince book, and I had gone through experiences not only with my own sons, but also the high school boys that were basically my sons as well. And, okay, so that was cool. Then, you know, what I found that happened to me is that God, in his amazing way, I would find that I would be in a situation, maybe over months, that I couldn't explain, didn't understand why they were happening. So, for example, to give you an example,
sure.
Before I started writing the Pampered Prince book, I started having issues at school with my mothers, with the mothers of my son, my boys at school.
Right.
You know, like they would be irritated. You know, I had one woman tell me, my sons, you know, my kids are brilliant kids, and he would never cheat because I, you know, he had plagiarized
paper.
Okay,
got it.
And, you know, I didn't make a big deal about it, but I did have to take it in front of the administration. And
right.
So I'm sure it was some embarrassment, but she was actually very nasty about it. And, you know, as a teacher, I mean, you know, God love us all. When we're teaching, you know, we're teaching your kids, folks. Come on now,
yeah,
work with us.
Exactly.
But anyway, at that point, you know, I just had my assistant principal was down my throat. You know, well, are you sure he cheated? Come on. You know, I knew he cheated. All right.
Right.
So his mom went upside and down him as well as me. The next day, the student comes to school. And he comes, I was there early, and he apologizes, and he said, you know, I really did plagiarize. And I said, you know, I understand.
Okay. C. Lynn Williams, please give them the website. They can find more information about you, please.
www.clynnwilliams.com.
Thank you for being a part of Baseline again. You can always come back. I have you back soon again. You are, like I said before, officially friend of the show.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Thank you very much. And thank you. We'll do it again tomorrow at 4 p.m. Chris Bass and Baseline, UBM Talk, UrbanBroadcastMedia.com. Take care. One.
I want you to get together.